You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Follow us on social media at CJSF on Twitter, on Facebook and Instagram at CJSF Radio. Listen to old episodes and special programming on our SoundCloud at CJSF 90.1. Diverse, independent, and yours.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Well, good morning and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded lands of the Musqueam, the Squamish, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Coquitlam peoples. My name's Robin, and we're a full house in the studio this morning. I am here with Pranjali, who you have heard from before, and Tina, who's just joining us for the very first time today and interested in perhaps having her voice heard more often on the show. So that's very exciting. Say hello.
Hello, everyone. Yes, there we go. Hello. Well, that has been quite...
Hello?
You're on?
Okay, mine works. I'm Tina. Nice to meet you guys.
We got Pranjali on the mic now.
I think so, yeah. Oh, yeah. There we go. Okay. It has been quite a morning. But yeah, I'm so glad to be here. And I know we are here to discuss a very important issue. And I'm looking forward to also hear from Tina, who has a sort of expertise in sciences. And
sure. I wouldn't say expertise, but...
but yeah, I think we'll learn a lot from each other. So I'm very looking forward to today's topic. And thank you so much, Robin, for having us.
Yeah, of course. Well, as Pranjali said, our topic today is about housing. And part of the reason that is the case is because, of course, housing is always an issue here in the Vancouver and mainland, lower mainland area. If we're not talking about housing, we're talking about housing. And Vivian, who you will remember... and went back to her home country of Germany just a week ago, did an interview before she left with the spokesperson from the Pan-American housing. Anyways, I'll look that up and find exactly what the proper name of the organization is, in response to the federal budget that came out, and they have some issues about the money that was put aside for housing. So we'll hear from Vivian and her interviewee, Janice Abbott, and then have some commentary and discussion about housing. First off, though, we're going to hear a song, and very appropriately, I think, this is a track from the Raging Grannies, who, if you don't know about the Raging Grannies, they're an activist group of singers that sing about all kinds of social issues, and they have this song called Housing Song, which is just a quick little ditty, but I think it'll kick us off.
Millions of folks sleeping out in the street, clutching their bundles, it's cold without heat. No place to call home and no bed for their head. They're lucky if some of them even get fed. Wages are too low to pay the high rent, and folks are left homeless, not even a tent. It's time for a change, and on that we agree. More bucks for housing, not military. In this wealthy country, now wouldn't you think we could house all the homeless as quick as a wink? If we weren't spending billions on weapons of war, buy more bombs, no, let's first feed the poor. Build more bombs, no, let's first house the poor.
Thank you.
Okay, so first of all, who are you and what are you doing here in Vancouver?
So my name is Janice Abbott. I'm the CEO of Atira. Guess what I'm doing here in Vancouver, as well as living. Mm-hmm.
And you came from the organization Atira, so we are here right now. And can you tell me who you are and what they're doing? What's their mission?
Sure. So Atira Women's Resource Society is a women's anti-violence organization. Our vision is to build a world free of inequalities where everyone's human rights are respected and where women and girls have the right to participate fully and effectively in all the decisions that affect their lives. Mm-hmm. We manifest our mandate primarily through housing, although we do a whole bunch of other things as well, from daycare centers to legal advocacy programs to stopping the violence, counseling, outreach. So in addition to building and providing housing to women and children, we, in particular women who have experienced violence, we also have support programs.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get involved?
So I've been here almost 31 years. And like many women who do women's anti-violence work, I come from lived expertise. So most of us here, that's what drives our passion to do this work.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing work. And one of your biggest projects is women in housing, as you already mentioned. How's the situation of women's housing in Canada right now?
The situation for housing for everybody in Canada is obviously at a crisis point, because we don't have enough housing. Rent is high. It's particularly acute in cities like Vancouver and Toronto. Vancouver especially, we've seen, I think, 56% increase in rents in the last 3 years. I think a one-bedroom apartment in Vancouver right now goes for about $2,600 a month. We haven't seen anywhere near the same corresponding increases in people's wages. For women and children, especially women-led households, we know that women make less money than men. We know that women of color, women who are racialized, make less money than white women. We know that most single-parent families are led by women. So when you consider all of those factors, it's not hard to arrive at the conclusion that when there's a housing crisis, women and children are disproportionately affected.
And how do you support these women?
So, you know, from Atira's perspective, one of the things Atira does is build housing in as much as we can as a nonprofit organization and relying obviously on government programs. One of the things we're doing at the Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's Housing, which Atira is a part of, is advocating for government to include consideration for women and children in their housing policies. So some of the things, for example, are building units that have more than one bedroom or they're big enough to accommodate families. We would like to see units in places where women and children want to live, so close to public amenities, schools, grocery stores, that kind of stuff. We would like to see units set aside for women, not only housing developments that are led for and by women, but also set asides in housing developments for women and children as well. We want units to consider the possibility or that women who are disabled have children and women have children who are disabled, so we need to consider units that are accessible for women and children and big enough for women and children and in places. And so we want to see government develop policies that take all of that into consideration.
Mm-hmm. And could you explain what Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's Housing stands for?
Yeah, so the Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's Housing is a cross-Canada network of women and women-serving agencies, almost all of us doing housing wherever we are in the country. So we have members from New Newfoundland, from Nunavut and the Northwest Territories, the Yukon, every province across Canada. And our goal is to find the things that unite us, because although the regions of Canada are diverse and we all face different challenges depending on where we are. Like, the challenges are way different for housing in the north, for example, than they are than they are in the south, and they're way different if you're living in a remote or rural community than if you're living in an urban community. So we recognize there's vast differences, but we also recognize that there's lots of things we have in common, including the struggle for more housing for women. And so the goal is to come together and advocate together, to have the federal government include policies that positively affect women and children, housing policies that positively affect women and children, but also to lend a voice to each other in all of the unique challenges depending where we are in the country, and also to train women and provide education. So how do you write a letter to the editor? How do you advocate with your provincial, federal, municipal politicians? How do you get the media interested in the subject? How do you talk with one another? So it's really about building capacity in the women's housing sector across the country to advocate for change.
How can people like me support this woman too? Because not only shelters or women's centers support women, but how can I as a person and support those women?
So going into our website and signing on to our calls for action. So we have 6 calls for action that address some of the changes we'd like to see in housing policy to affect women. It's going out to public hearings in your communities when there's affordable housing developments being considered, and writing letters to politicians, writing letters and at every level, so municipal, provincial, and federal, encouraging more funding for housing. You know, we have to really think about the fact that there is going to be a ton of immigration into Canada. We don't have enough housing for the people who live here already, so what's going to happen to the immigrants as they come to Canada? Particularly when we see refugees, again, a lot of women headed to families. So we need all of our voices showing up at public hearings, showing up at rallies, supporting our calls to action, writing letters to their MLAs and MPs, and just really using our voices as loudly and as clearly as we can to advocate for housing for women. Again.
Yes, yeah, for sure. And we'll link your website on our archive so that people can check it out. And yeah, we were talking about housing and housing policies. So how are the housing policies for First Nation, Métis, and Inuit women different to white women's housing? Is there a difference?
Well, because of the history of colonization, genocide in Canada, we know that Indigenous women, so First Nations, Métis, Inuit women and children, women in particular, are more likely to be victims of violence. They're more likely to be victims of murder. They're more likely to be unhoused. So as acute as the housing situation is for white women or for people in Canada, it's that much more acute for First Nations, Métis, and Inuk women and children. And part of what we're calling for, the Pan-Canadian Voice for Housing, is a carve-out or a set-aside for housing for First Nations, Métis, and Inuk women that's led by First Nations, Métis, and Inuk women. When we build programs or housing or advocate for ourselves, it has to be led by us. So we really like to see a policy that allows First Nations, Métis, and Inuk women and children from across the country to develop and build their own housing that works for them and that's meaningful to them.
Yes, that makes total sense. And we came here together to talk about the budget of 2023 for women in housing and in general. And how do you want to spend this budget, and what is this budget about?
So we're talking about the federal budget?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this federal budget didn't see a huge amount of money for housing, and so our primary focus, in addition, as a network of women's organizations across the country, in addition, raising our voices and making sure there's more money for housing, and in particular for women's housing, in the next budget, and to advocate to reconsider and add more funding this year, we will be asking that the money that is available, that there are considerations that benefit women and children, so that whatever there is this year, that there's more housing built for women and children. But the reality is this budget didn't allow for a lot of additional money for housing, so it was a disappointing budget for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we have to continue yeah. talking about it.
Yes.
So, so important. And what are your main goals for this year, 2023, besides the budget?
Yeah, so the Pan-Canadian Voice for Women Housing, we'll hold our annual symposium in October. That's being held in Ottawa, so we'll bring women from across the country together to review our calls for action, see if they need to be updated or added to. I'd like to say we can delete some, but we can't because they're all still relevant. So we may massage them, or we may add to them. We will continue to offer training and support to women to build capacity so they can be loud advocates for housing wherever they live across the country. We will continue to meet virtually and strategize about how we can impact stories in the media, influence politicians, influence other organizations, just to continue to drive forth this message that we need housing for women and kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what has improved over the years? So I probably have seen so many things in your work here, during your work here, and where do you still see room for improvement when it comes to women's in housing?
Well, unfortunately, I've seen things like I could not have anticipated 31 years ago how bad the housing crisis would be today. So while certainly there have been things that have improved for women in the 31 years that I've been doing this work, there are a lot of things that are worse than they were 31 years ago. Mm-hmm. Housing prices, wages, all of those things have deteriorated over the last 31 years. And so instead of, you know, what has gotten better... tragically, things mm-hmm. have actually gotten worse when it comes to housing for everyone, and that, of course, disproportionately negatively affects women and kids.
Mm-hmm. But what has improved so far? I see the problem here.
It's worse. When it comes to housing, which is what the Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's mm-hmm. Housing is about, things have actually deteriorated. And that's it's deteriorated for everybody. There's no surprise to anybody. There's a housing crisis in this country, or there's a housing crisis and there's an income crisis. Some people might argue it's not actually housing, it's income. It's mm-hmm. income inequality, right? But yeah, it's definitely gotten worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very sad to hear. But
and, you know, the other thing we can say too is, you know, and there's lots of folks that believe there's a connection between this data and the pandemic, but in fact, there's been more women murdered by their partners in the last couple of years than in recent history.
I heard that too. Yeah. That femicide is getting worse and worse every year, and I would come to the end almost the end here. Why are so many women, children, and gender diverse people turned away by shelters, and how can we prevent yeah. that?
So the short answer is it's because mm-hmm. there's not enough shelters or not enough shelter beds. The longer answer is that should we be exploring whether shelter beds are the best use of funding? Would it be better to build long-term housing? Shelter beds are short-term. They certainly work when women are in crisis, but they also create anxiety because they're short-term. And, mm-hmm. and right now, women don't know where they're going to go after the shelter stay mm-hmm. runs out. So I think that, the easy answer, that sort of easiest answer is, well, we need to build more shelter beds, but then the question becomes, what's the best use of the limited funding? Mm-hmm. And should we be spending more money on shelters, or should we be spending more money on building long-term permanent housing so that women have housing options and don't have to go to shelters in the first place?
Yeah.
Because there's definitely women who stay in violent, abusive relationships because they have nowhere to go.
We are almost at the end of this interview, so do you have anything to add that I have missed asking about, or that would you like to add
I don't think so. I think you had a pretty comprehensive list of questions there. And you gave me lots of leeway. So I can't think of anything I've missed.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sinis, for this interview. And I have one last question. Do you have a song that inspires you, gives you power? Yeah.
So trying to, probably people maybe you've never heard of, like Tracy. I can't remember this fast car. So that might be one, or... God, I need more time.
It's
give me
a
time.
Tricky question. Yeah, you can
email me. Can I email you
yeah,
a few ideas?
Sure, for sure. No worries, no stress. Yeah, thank you so much, Dennis, for this interview. And yeah, we are out here.
Well, I didn't do my due diligence and listen to that interview before now. Otherwise, we'd be listening to Tracy Chapman and Fast Car. But that was an interview that Vivian did with Janice Abbott from Atira and is also the spokesperson for the Pan-Canadian Women's Voice for Housing. There you go. A little bit of a mouthful. My name's Robin. You're listening to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM. And we are the campus-based community station from Simon Fraser University. And I have...
Pranjali.
And Tina.
With me in the studio. And we're going to just jump into conversation here about housing, which we were having a little bit of little bit of a conversation. It's kind of interesting because all of us live in different jurisdictions within the Lower Mainland, and so you know, I'm in Vancouver proper, just off Commercial Drive. Prenchley, you were saying you
recently,
just moved to Burnaby.
Just like 3 days ago, I'm in Burnaby. But before that, I was in like Surrey Dalrymple. So it was pretty strange situation in there. There's like very minimal public transit and everything is so far away. It's just like very open area, sort of. So not very accessible, but it was kind of cheap. So that was the only option that I could go for. And they usually don't allow parents to live with the person, so it was kind of hard time to find a place for me and my mom who was visiting me. So it took me a year to find this place in Burnaby, but finally I think I made it. What about you, Tina? Sorry,
wait a second. They don't allow parents to live
with the child.
That's really weird.
I know, right? Because they're like, if it's a partner, then it's okay, because I don't know. I just don't know.
Just
they have
say that she's your partner.
Well, that's very weird. But they were like, we don't know if we can accommodate your mother for so long. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, well, okay, then I'm not coming. So, you know, I can't just leave my mother and just move on. And just like, you know, we are living at two different places when she is here to visit me. So it was kind of like a weird situation. But then I found something off the SFE website. So they had like student accommodations. So finally found something that is pretty close to the campus and everything else as well. But yeah, that's my experience.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And Tina, you live...
I live in Surrey Langley area, so I understand the transit situation.
Yeah, it's too bad.
It's so hard to get anywhere without a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to live near UBC because that's where I went to school. And then after I got laid off from my job, I couldn't pay for my rent anymore. So I moved back to my house in Surrey. Yeah.
Hmm. And also, like, the transit is bad in the sense that you have to, like, change at least 3 to 4 buses. Even the connectivity is too bad.
Yeah.
It just takes forever to reach anywhere. And even the, like, sort of, like, groceries markets and all those things are too far away. And then I had to take, like, 2 buses to, you know, go to the grocery shop and, like, bring those bags back at home. And we lived in a basement, just kind of, like, sad. Yeah, in the winter especially, because it's too dark outside, and then you're living underground, sort of, and But yeah, I had mother by my side, so it was fun.
Yeah, I also live in a basement near UBC, so I understand. It's really dark, so it makes me really depressed in winter. And also, it's kind of moldy.
I know.
Yeah, it smells bad.
I know. Yeah, it's a pretty bad situation. It took me a year, but just very, very surprising. I was like asking my friends, asking my family members who were here in Vancouver, that do you have any places, any other basements, and couldn't find anything. And if I found something, no mother, which was weird. Yeah.
Well, and even if you do find an ad that, you know, you might be eligible for and that you can maybe afford, the competition for these places is so steep, right?
That is more competitive than applying to a college. Like, it is too hard because there are 20-25 people who are like double income households, and those people are looking for these places, and I am on like a part-time job. I'm a student, so I don't have that kind of like stable income source, and they're like, you have to show your bank statements as well, like how much you have and how much your income is, revenue, and how much can you afford this for a long time, and all sorts of things. Like, it is too much. It is just too much. They do like police record, and they're like, show us your IDs if you're a valid person. We need references from your work, that you are a decent person, even from like references from your previous owner that you were living with, or so it's a whole process. And I'm like, am I applying to a university? What is happening here?
It feels like you're applying for a job.
Exactly. And then there is so long of a wait list. There were like at least 5 to 10 people at the same time that they were showing the houses to. And they just like gave out forms, and they were like, you can fill out this form and get us back. And when we send them, we are never like reverted ghosted. Back to ghosted outright, because obviously I don't have a stable source of income as a student. So yeah, that is my story.
Well, it's the story of a lot of folks, I think, here. And, you know, whether or not you're a student or not, I think that there's a lot of people who still sort of cobble together income from, you know, various job sources, you know, whether they work a couple of part-time jobs, or, you know, whether they freelance, or, you know, this whole gig economy. It's hard to, you know, kind of attach this, I make X amount per year, therefore I can do, you know, X, Y, Z with my housing. And, you know, even for us, my partner and I live together, and likewise, we live on the bottom level of an apartment block. Luckily, we face south, so we get a little bit of sun, but a lot of the time the balcony above us, you know, blocks out the direct sun. So it still feels a bit dungeony. But there was a housing survey, and I'm not sure if it was before the federal budget it came out, or if it was after the federal budget came out, but it was in relation to, we'll give you $500 to help with your rent, right? If you're eligible. but they kind of don't recognize that even if you're making more than the allotted amount that they had specified that you could make, right? You're still paying more than 30% of what you make on housing, which is way, way beyond what is affordable, especially if you're taking two buses because you live in a food desert and there's nowhere that you can go to actually get your groceries without paying extra money, right? To go back and forth to be able to do that, and, you know, the price of inflation just in general. One of the things, and I just want to read some of these out, because I think that it sort of prefaces part of what we're talking about. This comes from the Canadian Human Rights Commission, and it was their sort of statement on the federal budget